And if everybody could stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Lynn, if you could do the roll call.
Trustee Davis is absent. Trustee Doherty?
Here.
Trustee Dye?
Yes, ma'am.
Trustee Freckleton?
Here.
Trustee Holness?
Here.
Trustee Howard?
Here.
Trustee Lloyd?
Here.
Trustee Lubai?
Here.
And do we have any requests for public participation?
No requests.
Okay, with that, we will go into the public hearing for college policies and turn it over to Brian.
Thank you and good afternoon. This is the final round on sections 3.03, section 7, and section 8. This is second reading, so we can go through these as quickly as you want to. Policy 303, this is a major change on campus free expression. It allows the recording of classes, and the bigger part is it says the college cannot shield faculty students from viewpoint diversity. So a lot of people are scratching their heads as to what shielding means. Section 7.01, student conduct, and this is another major revision based on the state law that passed July 1st. So it will revamp how we do student discipline. Section 7.02 is a minor change for legal authority. 7.03 is an elimination of a language requirement and just moving it to procedure. Makes it easier to change it without having to come to the board every time. 7.04, another minor statute revision. 7.05, no changes. 7.06, disability services, essentially changes the name disability to accessibility. 7.07, a student's borrowing equipment, is a title change. The remainder, 7.08 through 8.16, there are no changes.
Excellent. Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Next is the consent agenda. Any items anybody wants to pull? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Dr. Lobasso, we will turn it over to you now.
Thank you. I'd like to start my update to ask for a moment of silence. Earlier this week, we lost a longtime colleague, friend, and just an amazing person, Keith Kennedy. Passed away suddenly, I believe Sunday night, and had been with the college for 40 years plus, I think. And anyway, a tremendous loss to our community. He has shaped the lives and guided so many students. He'll be dearly, dearly missed. So I ask everyone for a moment of silence. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on. And again, thank you for that. Keith was a dear friend as well. And as I said, you will be missed. Some of my updates, the fall semester began and we were able to do some welcome back events that were outdoors. We are still, implementing, many of our safety guidelines. There's regular cleanings going on, and we have high flex classes to help thin out size classes that were made available, and I believe things are going as well as they can under the circumstances. We working with the Mary McLeod Bethune Statue Committee. Things are working really well there. We are looking at the unveiling at this time for October 11th. So we're excited about that, and hopefully as the trend hopefully continues here with COVID, and it'll be we'll be able to do some nice events surrounding the statue being here, and then we do have homecoming on the 7th and 8th. We did cancel all indoor activities for homecoming, and we'll just be doing a few of the outdoor activities for homecoming this year. And the foundation gala has been moved. It was going to be scheduled for the 21st, and we will be revisiting and firming up a date in the future. With that, I am going to conclude. One of my other updates, on our housing project. I'm not sure if you got a chance to see the back of campus, but if you get a chance to drive by, the building is coming along. Up there it is, coming along nicely. So progress continues, and to date we have received 66 applications, of which 41 are complete. Of those, 35 are from Volusia Flagler County residents, 62 are in the state of Florida, and 4 are out of state, and there's 1 international student in that mix thus far. So pretty good with the applications that just opened a few weeks ago. So we're excited about that. Those are great numbers, we think, to begin the process. So with that, I'm going to transition to our legislative priorities, and I'm going to have Amy Locklear kind of review them with you. And as in the past, we will look for a consensus on this, not so much a vote, but thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So the following are the legislative priorities that we have been working on. I'm going to list them all and then give you a little bit of detail about them. The remaining funds for the Deltona building that we discussed before, and I would add that we are including costs of renovation in a grant application for a job growth grant, so we might very well get funding that way. A firearms training center on the DeLand campus. Funding for equipment and a faculty member for a new program, pharmacy technician. Advanced manufacturing equipment to support the mechatronics and FAME program. And some equipment for and some renovation to support both our database and cybersecurity programs. It's the creation, this was new for me, of a sensitive compartmented information facility called SCIF. So we're going to be cool and use the right terminology. So on the Deltona building, this would be the remaining funds. As we talked about many times, it allows for expansion of critical programs in the most populous city in Volusia County. Previously funded installments in the years that you see listed here. It's a multi-purpose building, as we've talked about. These are the three programs that the building would house, 2 full AS degrees and 1 vocational certificate. And the request for the remaining funds is $703,833. The second item, we did a presentation on this in the past, is a firearms training center that would be used in our Law Enforcement and Corrections Academy, DeLand Campus. The plans are for a 10,682-square-foot facility with 18 firing lanes. It would also include a virtual training room. We already have this equipment where students are placed into a virtual situation and they have to decide right in that moment what their reaction should be. It's really good training. This would also include an observation area for the instructors. Right now, this would serve approximately 240 Law Enforcement Training Academy cadets and about 100 current officers who get their certifications done at firing ranges. And we offer that continuing ed program. So we would use, we already know we would have that many students. Construction would begin in June of next year and be completed in May of 2023. The request is $6,166,18. Next is the pharmacy technician program that I mentioned before. This is a vocational certificate. Dr. Gibson mentioned that we had done a community survey about this. There's a lot of demand out there and a lot of job growth expected over the next 8 years or 7 years. The students would earn a specific certification called Certified Pharmacy Technician. We are asking for faculty salary and benefits and about $237,000 in equipment. And so the total request is $297,123. And this program would be on the Daytona Beach campus. Next is equipment for the Advanced Manufacturing Program. We have some outdated modules that would need to be replaced, some CNC machines, two portable CNC machines, some trainers and modules, some virtual reality headsets and the accompanying software. This supports our Associate of Science in Mechatronics and our First Florida FAME chapter. The request is $315,500. And lastly, cybersecurity. The SCIF that I mentioned before, this is an example would be the White House Situation Room. That's a SCIF. So is Air Force One. That's a SCIF. It allows for the use of very sensitive information. It is acoustically sound. It would be remodeling an area at the ATC that already exists. It would meet NSA and DoD security standards, including network routers, racks, and a firewall. A dedicated internet connection trenching. This is literally digging a ditch. So I know it's more complicated than that. Out from the ATC to the road, and computer refresh. And that total request is $412,130. So these are our requests that we are planning to present this year. Dr. Labasso, I'll turn it back over to you.
Great. So again, thank you, Amy. And any questions or comments from the board?
Commonly, the only comment I make is the same one as last year's, is if we all are comfortable with these, it'd be great if you could get us some talking points. I mean, we can talk to the facilities, I think, but anything that supports great things Daytona State has done, you know, growth in nursing, just that way if we're at a meeting with the legislator or we happen to see one, we can just quickly remember, hey, here's a key talking point as to why this is a good investment for the state.
Absolutely. Yep. As soon as the board gives us a consensus to move forward, we'll be producing our, you know, quick brochure on them, as well as those little cards that we typically do. So absolutely.
Gary?
I've just got more or less a question, Tom, that I started thinking about this a little bit more afterward, after our discussions, but do we have a sense on the law enforcement piece? You know, obviously $6 million is going to get more attention than the ones that we're asking $300,000 or $400,000 on. What sense do we have in terms of receptiveness to that in the budget?
Well, this is on our CIP, so it would be a PICO project. So in terms of PICO projects, it's actually a small amount. Many of the PICO projects, you know, are like our Deltona building in the 13, 14, and higher, $20 million range. So it's a fairly small in terms of PICO projects. So, and I think, you know, with the need to continue to provide highly qualified, trained police officers, I would think they would be very open to a request like this.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for explaining that a little bit better for me on that.
Yeah. This doesn't come. This comes out of a bigger pot of money that's designated for buildings. So it's a little different than the other requests that are in there that are typically smaller.
Any other questions? Everyone seems okay then? No. Tom, it seems like we're all shaking our head. You have our endorsement.
Yeah.
Very great. And again, you know, with as before, in the event we do get any kind of you know, information as we move forward, that and I will obviously keep you informed, but that we may tweak things here and there if needed. So very good. So that's a consensus. We will move forward.
Great. Thank you, Tom.
And so then I would also like to, if I could, you all just approved a pretty big gift. I would like to invite Tim Norton up for a moment to share a little bit about the generous gift we received from the Allens.
Thank you, Dr. Labasso, and good afternoon. And thank you, board members, for approving the receipt of $1 million gift from Bob and Carol Allen. Bob and Carol are shown here with Amy Zoka, the dean of the chair of the School of Nursing. And with this gift, your naming of the Bob D. and Carol Allen School of Nursing goes forward. I wanted to tell you just a little bit about the Allens and tell you something about how this gift came to be. In late 2018, Sue Durge, who was our director of development until April of this year when she retired, reached out to the Allens. They had never made a gift to Daytona State College, but they were on her database, and she did a little research and identified the Allens. Bob, some of you know Bob because he was the president of Consolidated Tomoka and CEO for 12 years and then became the chair of the board following that. Bob was instrumental in putting together a lot of the property that has been developed west of Williamson Boulevard, including he was very influential in the Advanced Technical College that now we have as a campus of ours. And just great folks. But Sue began a relationship, and they made their very first gift in late 2018. It was a $100,000 scholarship for nursing. Carol had had some medical problems, and they had been in hospitals both in Halifax and Advent, and they had great care from our nurses in training, and she loved that. And so they began making gifts, and this spring Bob came to see me. Carol is not in good health and is not getting out of the house now, but he came to see me, and he said, "Tim, we're ready to do more." Well, they had already given about $640,000 since the end of 2018. And he comes about twice a year and wants to do a $100,000 scholarship here and there. And so we started some other scholarships this spring, including $100,000 for the Bachelor of Science in Accounting program, our new program. And so at that time, I presented to him the idea of, "Bob, you know, you should leave a legacy here that's something's really, really significant, not that your gifts aren't." And we had a great conversation. He said, "I'd love to do something more, but let me think about it." So he called me about a month and a half ago and said, "I'm ready to do that naming." And Carol and I don't care anything about the name, but we want to do this. We believe in the program. And so within 3 weeks, he had said, "I want to get this money transferred." And so before you approve the agreement, we already had $1 million in the bank from their gift. They're just great folks. They moved here from North Carolina in 1990 for Bob to take that role. Bob is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy and Harvard. He's an MBA graduate from Harvard. Carol raised their family, and then after the age of 40, went back to Wake Forest Law School. And she's a JD. She practiced and taught civil law, including she taught here on our campus at UCF. And I'm just thrilled that they want to do this. We want to have a celebration when the time is right, when COVID is not challenging us. We had hoped to have them here today, but they're not. Bob is not comfortable in this current environment, as we all understand. So I just think we've had a lot of wins lately in the nursing program. Dr. Zoka and Dr. Chesley and Dr. Locklear. The leadership they've provided has just been tremendous, and this gift will immediately benefit our program and students. $750,000 of it is an endowment, permanent endowment. $250,000 is available immediately. So Dr. Zoka will make recommendations up through to Dr. Lobasso about the spending of that money. And if any of the $250,000 is not spent between now and 24 months from now, it'll go into the permanent endowment. But it will allow a lot of things to happen. And I thank you for the approval. And I think it's a great thing for us to celebrate as a college. Thank you very much.
And you're right, it's a great example of passionate faculty and staff working with your office and developing relationships, and hopefully a model for many more to come. So with that, Chris, on to facilities.
Okay, good afternoon. We've got three items today. The first being the selection for the CM at risk for our, it's the contractor for our new building 2 in Deltona. We like to get them on as early as possible to work with the architects as they're coming up with the design to keep us within our budget with pre-construction services. So we did move forward with RFQ solicitation. We had 8 companies that were all very well qualified respond to that solicitation. After going through those, we had a tie for our third place and ended up having a short list of 4 companies. Had presentations by all 4, and at the end of it, the scoring for Ajax Building Company came up first as our list on our list. And so what we're asking for is approval to move forward with negotiations with Ajax Building Company for the Deltona Building 2 project.
Move approval.
Second.
Second.
Question.
Question.
Do we have any prior experience
with
Ajax?
I do not here at the college campus, but in other state colleges, yes. So we do know of Ajax. They've actually presented several times on a couple of our projects, had been very close, never actually got to number one. Actually, everybody that's on this list, Clancy and Thays, actually was in the original submission, and I believe all 4 of these, we went out 3 years ago for the same solicitation. They were all on the short list at that point for this building as well. So Ajax in particular, we do know of a lot of their work that they've done throughout the state of Florida, actually.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Motion passes.
Very good. Okay, the second item that we have is our second installment of the HERF funding for upgrades to our HVAC systems on campus using the funding that's coming for COVID-related expenses. As I mentioned last time we met, I'll be bringing these each month for you to approve. You can see the breakdown there on the different cleaning and things that we'll be doing with this portion of the money. We'll be coming back next month as well.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? Aim or Sarah?
So when we're looking at the air handling stuff, are we looking at UV lighting and things like that to put? I don't know if you've seen the lights that go into the boxes.
Yes, yeah. So great question. So when the whole COVID thing started on our newer buildings within the last 8 or 10 years, we really looked at UV filtration as a means of destroying, you know, airborne bacteria, viruses, those things. The other option was bipolar ionization. After going through a bunch of it, we decided that bipolar was lower maintenance and has a 99.8% of killing airborne bacteria and viruses. So we started about 3 years ago upgrading our buildings to that before COVID started. Since COVID started, we went into high gear with it. And now I'm happy to announce that I believe it was last month, we finished 100% of our buildings all now have bipolar ionization in all of our air handlers on all of our campuses. So it helps with the faculty and staff coming in knowing that that air is constantly being filtered in all our buildings. So that was priority number one, and that's done. So we finished that. Now we're actually going to like the second priority, which is duct cleaning, and you know, because it holds all kinds of things. So we're trying to do that. We're gonna use as much of this money as we can to upgrade anything we can do with HVAC and air quality.
Great question. Anyone else? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay. So the next one is actually part of the firing range project for DeLand. We went out and asked for an RFQ for finding an architect to help us start doing some schematic design and pricing for that facility. So we went out and did an RFQ as well. We only got two respondents for this one. It is a highly specialized project because it would be 18 firing ranges, or 18 firing lanes. So we had two that responded, both well qualified, had done several projects, some of them on state college campuses and some of them for police departments throughout the state of Florida. Both of them were shortlisted, and we did have them present. And when it was done, the architect's design group came out ahead in the rankings, and so we would also like permission to start negotiations with them to start our design for that facility.
We'll move.
Second.
Questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Very good. Thank you. That's all I have tonight.
Good afternoon and welcome. Okay, this will be the first financial report that we present for the new fiscal year, and it's through the period of August 31st, 2 months into the fiscal year, or just over 16.5% through. Okay, as you can see, this is our Fund 1 operating revenue budget to actual comparison. Through August 31st, we've collected $11.2 million, or 41% of the tuition and fee budget, $7.3 million, or 14% of our state revenues, $1.7 million, or 27% of our other revenues, and $1 million, or 54% of the board-approved transfers that took place back in June. We have a couple of transfers yet to make, and that'll complete those. So in total, we've collected $21.3 million, or 24% of our operational budget, which is $88.5 million. Moving on to our operating expense budget to actual comparison, similar. In personnel, we've expended $7.6 million, or 11% of the budget, $10.7 million in current expenses and encumbrances. Of that, $4.1 million has been expended. The other $6.6 million is tied to purchase orders and encumbered. $311,000 in capital outlay, or 15% of the budget. Of that, $63,000 in actual expenses and $248,000 of encumbrances. In total, expenses and encumbrances, we have $18.7 million obligated. That's 21% of our overall budget. And removing the encumbrances, we would be at $11.8 million expended, or 13% of the budget. This is an overview of our carry forward fund balance for our operating fund one. $14.9 million is our starting point from our fiscal year end of 6/30/21. Of that $14.9 million, $5.2 million is the 5% state required reserve that we must hold. Board designated, $2.4 million. Our unallocated reserves are just over $7 million. And $205,000 of year-end encumbrances that were tied to purchase orders that rolled over in Fund 1. So our net projected fund balance as of the date of this report, August 31st, is just over $12 million. Next is the slide showing the comparison year-over-year of our revenue budget to actual. You can see at this 24% of our budget's been realized to date this year, as opposed to 30% in the prior year. There, it may look like a little bit of a lag. The last year number included a $4.5 million transfer from Fund 7, if you recall, that we transferred into Fund 1 and then turned around and transferred it right back later in the year. But in that this snapshot of time comparison is what's showing, you know, elevating it up to the 30% in the prior year. Okay, we always show this slide as the three-year analysis of tuition and fees. You can see in total down at the bottom, we've collected $11.2 million in all tuition and related fees, as opposed to $12.5 million in the prior year. That's about a $1.3 million gap, or right around 10%. If you just isolate the in-state tuition, we're, that category is down 6.6%. And the other areas, out-of-state tuition, you know, is down some, but that fluctuates year to year. We don't, there really is no pattern in that particular area. And then the other one I wanted to highlight is the other fees. You can see there's been a drop-off of about $400,000. That's simply because last year we had all those classes flip online due to COVID, which then generated a distance learning fee. So we had a big abnormal year in that other fees category in 2021. So this year our allocation of the different modalities has come back a little more normal, not quite there yet, but we're that's why you're seeing the drop off in the other fees category. The good news, you know, yeah, we're down some, but again, we're going to still utilize the HERF federal stimulus dollars to offset any lost revenue that we might see after each semester. So we're hoping the gap will come closer as Fall B comes around, but we are happy to have those federal dollars on hand. Next is a comparison year over year of our budget to actual. You can see we're very consistent. Personnel costs 11% of the budget in both years. Current expenses, we're at 50%, 56% realized this year, 54% last year. And then in capital outlay, we have 15% realized this year versus 21% last year. Okay, moving on to our Fund 7 Capital Projects Fund. This is the overview we typically provide each board meeting, shows you the major funding sources. I'll just draw your attention to a couple of new rows that added. Third one down is the... You'll recall at our June board meeting, I believe, we asked for permission to set aside $3 million for deferred maintenance projects, $2.5 million to go to renovation and remodeling, another $500,000 for maintenance repair. So this is simply showing that subcategory coming out of the control account and now being utilized for those deferred maintenance. But the other new item is the second from the bottom, where it's state general revenues. That's that is the Deltona building funding that we received this year. Normally it would be up there in PICO, but it truly wasn't a PICO funded project. It came through contingent general revenues, another state funding source that they utilized. So we created a separate category. So to kind of summarize that last slide, our beginning fund balance at the beginning of July was $45.4 million in our capital projects fund. We've received nearly $4 million of cash and appropriations to date, expended another $6.8 million, with $5.6 of that being true expenditures, and another $1.2 million encumbered. And that results in a $42.5 million fund balance per the date of this report. Of the $42.5 million, $18.4 is committed to date, and the other $24 million or so is uncommitted at this time. This shows our recap of our major capital projects in progress. We have 8 projects on this list. Some of these you'll recall from the prior year as their continuation projects, and that would be the third one down, all the way down to the bottom, starting at Flagler down to the ERP, our continuation. The top two you'll recall, you know, we came to the board for approval on and funding and built into our capital project budget for the multipurpose field, and the Daytona Campus Infrastructure Improvements Project for sidewalks, lighting, and such. Total estimated cost of all the projects on this list is the $33.7 million. So that concludes my August financial report, unless we have any questions or comments.
Questions, Randy?
Just a comment. I appreciate the clarity of the reporting. You're doing a great job, and I know that you, it's not like you're a rookie, but it's still relatively new for us, so thank you. You obviously learned from the best, and that's and it shows.
Appreciate it, Trustee Dock.
Martin, are you calling ICE up and telling her you're better than budget right now, year to date?
No regular updates.
<That'll> rob.
Anything else?
Nope. Next. Okay. Next item is just an informational item that we bring before you each month. This is the August expenditures that exceed $50,000 individually, whether it's a by check, ACH, or wire transfer. Again, it's just an information item. Next item is a new item, and a new to Daytona State College and the entire Florida college system, and it is our carry forward spending plan. So this was set to be put into action last fiscal year and was put on hold due to COVID and everything going on at the state level. So they gave us a 1 year reprieve to implement this and bring it forward. So for us, it's driven by Florida statutes. And for any Florida college institution with less than 15,000 FTE, you must do a spending plan for anything that exceeds the 5% state required reserve. The slide Lynn has up now shows you just that calculation. So for Daytona State, we had $14.7 million of reserves as of June 30th, 2021. You back out the 5% state required, and then it leaves you with a balance of nearly $9.5 million to create your spending plan from. This is new to all the colleges, and we've had discussion with the other business officers, and a lot of us like to think of it not only as a spending plan, but almost like a contingency savings plan as well. It doesn't mean that you necessarily have to spend every dollar on everything you put on the list. It's just a plan. Almost like a budget, and it will and can change year to year. We have to do this each year, and we'll be bringing it forward every September, and then has to go to the State Board of Education by November 15th. I can quickly go down the items included on our spending plan from the top. A lot of these categories were provided in the Department of Education template, so the top one is a previously funded PICO project, so it was a good opportunity for us. We know that the Deltona project was heavily state funded, but will also require some of our own funds. And the state actually prefers to see some matching funds kicked in on these projects. So we allocated $1 million for the Deltona project that would come out of possibly out of the Fund 1 bucket. The items 2 through 5 should be nothing new. We included those in the budget that we brought forward in June as part of our proposed use of Fund 1 fund balance dollars. So equipment refresh, WDSC support, the Florida Risk Management Consortium 75% confidence level assessment, and the grant matching were all in our budget and approved by this board, and perfect items to include in our spending plan as uses of fund balance. Coming below that, we know that in January we'll have a health insurance premium increase. It was another good opportunity to put this item on our spending plan. So for the 6 months from January through June, that's estimated to be $264,000. We included that. The next one's a one-time non-reoccurring payment to employees. If it were board approved, that would come out of the board designated pot within that fund balance operating fund. And again, you would see that again. We would need to bring that forward if it were to occur. Coming down, this is a common one that a lot of the institutions utilized, reserve for state declared emergencies. As we know, one hurricane to the magnitude of what Gulf State College took up in the Panhandle, and we could use our whole $9.5 million on an event like that. So for us, we have the $4.6 million in that category. And last but not least was the indoor firing range for DeLand, which Dr. Locklear and Chris have spoke about. That's on our CIP list. It's a legislative priority, similar to Deltona. So we think they're two good capital projects to include on the spending plan as well. If there's no questions or comments, this will require board action.
A motion?
So moved.
Second.
In a second, any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. Okay, the next item is very similar to what I brought to you last board meeting for the foundation, if you recall. It's it's giving authorization by this board for utilization of personnel, office space, equipment, and such for our direct support organizations. So this one is for the DSC Housing Corporation. Again, this is driven by statute. It is allowable. The support documents show that the shared personnel are quantified below. It's a pretty good number. It's an estimate. Some of the positions aren't quite filled yet, so we just take our best stab at this point in time. But the real number, of course, will be whatever is incurred based on those percentages throughout the fiscal year. Now, the only difference between what I brought last month regarding the foundation and housing is that all material allocable expenditures related to housing must be reimbursed by the housing corporation to the college, whereas the foundation does not have that requirement. So in this instance, the personnel portion will be reimbursed by the housing corporation to the college. And the other part, the square footage for the office space, you can clearly see that's an immaterial amount, less than $1,000. We would not need reimbursement for this portion. But we, full transparency, we always want to make the calculation and show it to both boards. And with that said, we did bring this before our Housing Corporation board this morning, and it was approved by that board. This board would need to make a motion.
Motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. And staying on the same theme with Housing Corporation, we brought the foundation audit before you last month. This month is the Housing Corporation's turn. And they're on the fiscal year just like the college, so it was through June 30th, 2021. Very clean audit, unmodified opinion, no internal control or any weaknesses cited in the audit. As I told the Housing Corporation board this morning, this one, it requires a very quick turnaround. We have to include it in our numbers with the college's annual financial report, and that's due to the state August 15th. That means that these auditors need to come in, do their field work in the month of July, get it turned around and issued before that date so we can include it into the college reporting package. So James Moore and Company was the CPA firm that did the audit, did a good job scheduling, getting in, getting out, and issuing the audit. So this is just brought before this board for information, but I just wanted to bring it to your attention. My staff did an excellent job keeping up with the request as they have on every audit. As you can see, we've been busy with audits and so forth over the last several months, but we're one by one getting through them and doing a good job.
I just want to pay a compliment to Marty and his staff, because when you have a new corporation on top of that, you know, building it, as many of you know, can be a challenge in the early stages. And to come out of that with a unmodified assessment during that audit is excellent. And again, kudos to you, Marty, and your staff.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Marty.
Thank you all.
Dr. Locklear.
Thank you, Dr. Howard. We have one item under academics. This is We're asking for your approval of the textbook and instructional materials affordability report. This is an annual report that we bring to you to show all the different ways that we are trying to reduce the cost of textbooks and instructional materials. You see that listed in your materials. And we also need to report on the number of books that had a late adoption as defined by the state. They ask that we have at least 95% of all books and materials posted in the registration system 45 days before the first day of class. We had 97.1% posted. Those that were added late were directed independent studies or courses added late. I'm happy to say that they are modifying this rule in the future so that we don't have to count when we just add a class as a late adoption, because we always have to add classes when enrollment goes up in a certain area. So we believe that this will be even better in the future. So I'm happy to report we are in compliance, and we ask your approval.
So move.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great job. Now we'll move on to the constituent heads, and since Tom is virtual, I'll call you up here. We'll start with the Student Government Association, Adrienne Tolles-Williams.
Give me 1 second, Adrienne. I got to pull up here.
Good morning, good afternoon, I suppose, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pleasure to be here reporting for you all once again, this time with the fall semester in full swing. The last time I came before you, I didn't have very much to report. I went over our objectives for this semester, starting with recruiting and connecting with more students and the welcome back events. The welcome back events and our presence at them did give us a chance to connect to a lot of new students and the facilities available on Daytona State. On the left here is all of the existing members and officers that we had on our board at the beginning of the semester. And on the right are our new members. We have we just appointed an executive secretary, Sophia Costa. She's been doing a wonderful job, as well as our new vice president for the New Smyrna Beach campus. And then we have three more representatives all applying for candidate positions in the future. Moving forward from there, as our board grows, we have been determined to brainstorm and plan creative opportunities for students to participate in community service events, as well as looking for opportunities to reach out into the community and fundraise for future projects. So for our recruitment day, our chair and also our Senator of Student Activities, Venerina Costanza, she's also the young lady who joined me here today, her as well as her vice chair, our vice president for the Flagler Palm Coast campus, have taken the lead in planning this SGA recruitment day as a way for us to connect with more students. We are still in the planning process and trying to find out ways we can have this event in a quick and safe manner for all of our students, to avoid minimal mess downstairs in the student center and to also make it fun and inviting for everybody. Our vice president, Phil Deltona, is researching new items to give away to students as incentives for fundraisers, or even just to hand out at events like we did at the Welcome Back events. And then I have been working alongside Ms. Therese Ramos and our advisor, Jennifer Thomas, in planning a trivia night and poetry slam to help commemorate the statue of Mary MacLeod Bethune that will be on display in the News Journal Center. We are hoping that this trivia night will be in collaboration with Bethune-Cookman University. However, I am still waiting on a response from the student government's advisor. We are currently looking for teams of six and will be sending out a recruitment email along with advertisements once we get it finalized by marketing to help advertise and promote this event. We are hoping to have that on October 29th. And then the following Friday, on November 5th, we will be having a poetry slam, also oriented around Ms. Bethune, and trying to connect our students and family and community members around the shared values that she represented, like responsibility, diversity, inclusion, and courage and responsibility and the power of knowledge. These are a few tentative drafts for the flyers and the ways in which we are trying to advertise these events. The News Journal Center will have a limited capacity, so I will be adding that provision. I have a Google form set up so we can control the number of people requesting to be in the audience for these events, and we are waiting for approval to see if the capacity limit will include the people backstage or if it will just include the audience members. We are also waiting on approval of whether or not we will be allowed to have concessions. If we are, then I am hoping to have bottled water and pre-sealed chips, popcorn, movie theater-esque snacks to maintain cleanliness and to avoid any open exposure to anything, to keep everyone's safety in mind. And that will That won't conclude my report. I apologize. my executive board also just voted to participate in the Academic Advising Week. This will be the week of the 18th through the 22nd. We will be having an event where we will talk to students about the benefits of joining SGA and how it can benefit personal growth, academic growth, and professional growth in the future. And we will also try to have a live Q&A event for our students as well, so they can ask us questions. I believe I got through everything with you all today. It's no overstatement to say that I've inherited a board of goal-oriented, strong leaders with bright ideas and kind hearts. I hope you leave today feeling as excited about the possibilities that lie ahead. And thank you all for your time and your support in the endeavors of the Student Government Association.
Great update. Thank you. Administrators Council, Alicia.
Hard act to follow. Deal with my vertical challengedness. Anyway, hopefully you can hear me. Good afternoon, everyone. The biggest update. Oh, thank you. You're so kind. I know. Sorry for the next person. So the biggest update that I have right now is that the Admin Council has finally gotten the annual 5K event ready for homecoming. It's gonna be on Saturday, October 8th, starting at 8 o'clock, show up at 7:30 for the start time. I have the flyer that I've sent to the constituency presidents. I've also sent it to the council members. If you're interested, you can find the race on runsignup.com, which is where you go to register. We have three different types of registration, one for persons who want to run or walk, no judgment, and that's $30. We have one for students, and that's $15, and then we have a virtual 5K. I don't know what that means, but if you want to run virtually, you could do that too. we have added a new component to the race, which is catch the falcon. So the first male and female to catch our falcon, Freddy, will get a new pair of sneakers. And then other participants will get a medal and get a t-shirt. So if you're interested, please either email me or you can contact Kristen in the foundation, Kristen Hansen, or Coach Judy, who will have also information for the race. So we're hoping to get as many participants as possible. The funds raised from the event are donated to the foundation to support scholarships here for our students. So last year we raised about a little over 4,000. I know we're like under 3 weeks away, but you know, maybe we can beat it. And if you are not interested in running or walking, you can definitely sponsor a student. So I encourage you to do both, and hopefully I'll see you there. Besides that, the council is working on a couple of things. One of them I mentioned today, which is we're working on identifying a community service project that we all can participate in on a voluntary basis in the spring semester. So for my next update, I hope to have more information on that, as well as the other things that we're working on. So thank you so much.
Great, thank you. Now, the Career Employees Association, Amanda Schroyer.
Well, the CEA, we have chosen our September recipient of the College of the Career Employee Association Recognition Award. We've chosen Todd Gillen. He is the senior supervisor in the Document Center or the Print Shop over in Building 1100. We are now accepting nominees for our October recipient, so we hope to have some more nominees by October 8th. And of course, we're still looking for officers. There's still just two of us. Still looking for a vice president, a treasurer, and a secretary. And we've recently gotten in the participants for the student award applications that we've put in for this semester. We didn't get a whole lot of participation with this, but with the ones that we did receive, we are going through them right now, and we will be notifying our recipients on also October 8th. So, but that's all I have for now. So thank you.
Great, thank you. Faculty Senate, Paul.
Cut on the glasses. One of my predecessors can't win. One of my predecessors was in the habit at board meetings of highlighting some of our faculty members, our individuals, and I've decided to kind of follow that model. So, with your permission, I'd like to feature this month. I'd like to feature Dr. Mary Ann Grommel. She's a professor with the School of Education. She's been with Daytona State College since 2009. Dr. Grommel participated in Teaching Beyond Borders faculty for service learning trips to Haiti and Nicaragua from 2014 to 2017. She is the recipient of the Les Simmons Student Advocacy Award, excuse me, for the 2018-19 academic year. Dr. Grommel today would like to share a little about service learning and one group's work with the Division of Blind Services. Dr. Grommel.
Hello, everyone, and I hope to be brief and informative. So this is our program. We're very, very excited to once again be welcoming our students into the community. Our teachers are already there in the classroom, but now we're going to have part of our classroom experience the service learning opportunities. I'm very proud to also say that our committee, the Service Learning Committee, is one that is not just talking about, you know, working and doing, but to be very mindful of it and to be able to allow our students to really think about the activities they're going into and about how to serve the community best. Our philosophy is to be that very thoughtful portion of the college to not only go out and do the experiences, but to report back to them. We actually have, as one of the activities, having the students do a selfie after they do the experience, so they could really remember and reflect on what experiences they've been through. Part of the other meaningful service into the community is to make sure that students get a deeper understanding. We want students to be very mindful that they are not only in a program that, you know, teaches the children, but they are also part of the community experience. This is what solidifies our role as teachers and educators in the community. So our actual event, it was a very exciting event because we didn't really expect to go into the community right away. But we have this wonderful opportunity where we're going to be creating and conducting virtual tours and some interviews with some key people at the Division of Blind Services. And it was great. Professor Gunn Shannon has introduced me to some of the folks that work at Division of the Blind. And we have been very fortunate to have this wonderful little slide into community service, not where we can take whole groups there, not yet. But we can start slowly introducing this partnership by conducting this virtual tour. So now, not only did I involve us, of course, you know, I have to get some friends, but we also have instructional resources that have been added, and April Bruning and Kevin Loden, they're all going to be helping us do the actual creation. The assignment itself is for our students to create the scripts, to go ahead and help with the filming, and then to start developing those relationships that are so crucial for the future involvement at Division of Blind Services. So we want to make sure that you, maybe just a little bit of background, that there's two divisions that we're going to be working with. One is the library, which will have the Braille and the talking books, and we're going to start doing a rebrand so that the basic thought is that, this group only works with the blind. And that's not true. It works with folks in the community that require some additional services with the talking books and with the Braille. So it's going to be working with all kind of branches. And my background is in exceptional student education, so they're also going to be working with some branches of autism, which is a really great thing. The other area they're going to be working on is the rehab center, and that's what actually you might see some folks on White Street where they're being guided and they're learning how to walk in the community. Well, this is part of that process, and some of them stay there, and they're able to learn more about the limitations that they are now facing. I think that's about it. Yeah. So again, this is a great, wonderful opportunity that I've been given, and I'm hoping to share, well, and maybe not in the future, but maybe through the Service Learning Committee, and we can go ahead and let you know what adventures we have at the Division of Blind Services. I think it's going to be a great partnership. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And finally, Billy Joe Donaway, Professional Counsel. I know, I should have mixed it up. I should have started at the end.
I don't know what I would do.
I know.
Good afternoon. Last month I was here and I told you we were recognizing professionals. So Stephanie Mims from Purchasing we recognized, and Robert Jacobs from our TRIO program were our Spotlights Awards last month. This month we're still working on our nominations for our awards, so we're working on nominations and are voting on that. I'm also looking for officers, so I'm seeking vice presidents to volunteer for professional counsel. We are looking forward to many service opportunities that are coming up. We're looking forward to our homecoming events, which are coming, as well as we work closely with the Center for Women and Men to provide them with some things too. So we're looking forward to that. Our next meeting is tomorrow at 11. That's why I don't have any big updates today, but I thank you for your time.
Great, thank you. Always great updates, and love hearing from the different constituents. So just real quickly on my end, two things I wanted to mention. One is there's an ACCT conference in October, and Betty will be representing us as a board. She always does a great job, so I just wanted everyone else to know that she will be there. And then the second one is I wanted to publicly thank the college and Dr. Labasso's leadership. You know, a while ago we got a call from the state of Florida, the governor's office, and others asking if we could help them in Palm Coast with a Regeneron site. I don't know how much everybody knows about it, but they went overboard, bending over to help out. They figured out a plan to move classes and people so that we could kind of isolate where the site was, do it in a very safe and thoughtful way. They did this virtually overnight, as I understand it, planning where to move classes and how to handle it. And if you think about our mission, which we look at every time we're here, which is great, you know, we're here to support the state. We are a state-funded institution and the community, and I think that that action showed that we were willing to bend over and answer a call for from help from the state. And I just wanted to say thanks to everybody involved in making that happen. And with that, we'll quickly run around the room. Betty?
Before coming, I drove around to look at the new residence, and it's just amazing to see it as it comes up, to think all the years we've talked about it and to finally see that it's becoming a real place. Today has been a good day, also looking at how the Deltona campus is another one we've talked about a lot, and to realize, too, that's also a realization that's coming to fruition. And I'm always excited to hear the different constituencies' reports, the excitement that you bring, the love of this campus that shows, of this university that shows when you give your presentations. And then I wanted Amy to thank the staff when I read the textbook selection. It's amazing. We've talked about it, but all the work that you guys have gone into to make that happen, to make it affordable, is greatly appreciated. So just please extend how much we appreciate all the staff going beyond to get it done.
Hey, Sarah?
So it's a new year, and it's just exciting to see everybody back in a room. I mean, we've been in here for a while, but, you know, school's back in, and our online numbers, I know everybody likes online, but I like kids in seats. it just gets them out and socialized as opposed to sitting at home. Most parents here, their kids are back in school, and I'm looking forward to a great year, and thank you all.
Thank you, Randy.
I just, first off, I wish Tom a speedy recovery, and thanks for joining us. I knew you were tough, but virtually. And I too, you know, it's interesting. I never leave the board meetings feeling like I wasted my time. Gain more knowledge, more enthusiasm. You think about facilities, and I'm glad it's you and not me. but every time we talk about facilities, really, it's ultimately how it affects people. And the only reason we're doing facilities is because of the effect it has on people. So when I hear about that, you know, it's a great investment in our community. Our communities continue to grow, and you know, we've got a responsibility, and it appears that all of the all of the things that we need are in place to be able to keep pace. So that's a good position to be in.
Thank you, Randy. Lloyd?
You know, it really broke my heart when I heard about Keith Kennedy. Such a wonderful individual, and may he rest in peace. And Tom, you run so fast that you ran into COVID, but you're getting better, and I hope you have quarantined from the rest of the family in the doghouse, and we hope to see you back here pretty soon. And to the staff, what a wonderful time it is to sit here and to listen to everyone pitching in and doing the things that makes this institution so great. Thank you all so much. I wish you all the best, and I'll see you in November.
Thank you. Gary?
Yeah, I was going to say about Keith, every time you saw him and interacted with him, and I had no idea he was going. He had other things going on, unfortunately, from a physical standpoint. And the smile that he always had every time you interacted with him. And I'm sure once we could get around to it, because it's so sudden right now, we're going to do something to honor his legacy here at the college. Your comments about the monoclonal center, I joked with Tom, you know, because he got that call like 6 o'clock the night before from the chancellor saying the governor wants to set up a monoclonal center at Daytona State. And Tom basically, in normal Tom fashion, was, we'll get it done. I'm not sure how, but we'll figure it out. And sure enough, with the help of a lot of folks, Chris, his team, Jim Marandino, and the team at the campus, done a great job. From what I understand, in the first couple of weeks, at least, it was about 50 to 60 people per day coming through there. And now the numbers actually, from what we're hearing, are down closer to like 30 to 40. So hopefully that, in turn with the other statistics we're hearing lately, you know, hopefully that's reflective of the decline. But also hearing the stories from the people that have gone through this, what a great service, both to the state and to the community that we're offering here by letting them utilize our campus. And I think our nursing schools, and Tom took full advantage of the opportunity to note that how many nursing programs that the governor enabled with his support of the funding. And so I think we gained some leverage as well with this. The final thing, again, Dr. Locklear, to you, Amy, and then your whole team, again, about textbooks, you know me. It's just a great job that y'all continuously do in terms of focusing on trying to find a way to improve that. And that expenditure is huge for our students, and getting that number down versus up is awesome, especially in this wonderful day of inflationary impacts. So thank you.
Great, thank you. And I understand Trustee Lloyd had to drop off, so that completes the roundtable. Sarah.
One more thank you. I know three people that went to Palm Coast to get treatment, and they are grateful that it was there.
Excellent, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I will adjourn the meeting, and Tom, hope to see you back here soon.